Hi everyone and welcome. Today we have an exciting webinar with Nanam. Before we begin, I just wanted to say if you have any questions, feel free to drop them in the Q&A box, and we'll be having the Q&A towards the end of today. Anyway, so into our amazing speakers that we've got. We've got Keita Funakawa, who is the CEO and co-founder at Nanam. Keita's passions lie the intersection of emerging technologies, digital arts, and science. He graduated from UC San Diego with a BS in Management Science, Quantitative Economics, and a minor in Visual Arts, Digital Media. He co-founded Nanam in 2015 and now leads company operations. And we have John Gast, who's a senior application scientist at Nanam. Jonathan has a background in pharmacology and medicinal chemistry. He completed his PhD in molecular pharmacology at Purdue University with a focus on mechanisms of action of synthetic lethal combinations. And as an application scientist at Nanam, he communicates with customers to understand their research objectives and create novel solutions through Nanam. And then last but certainly not least, we have Mike Bishop, who's a medicinal chemistry consultant at Bishop Drug Discovery Consulting. Previously, he was a director of medicinal chemistry at GSK for 26 years, and he completed his PhD at Rice University in natural product total synthesis. Mike's been working with Nanam now for over 3 years. So Keita, tell us, what is Nanam?
Yeah, super excited to be here, and thanks for that introduction. You know, we like to say that Nanam is the ultimate interface for science, starting with molecular data. So, you know, people often don't know what exactly that means, so I'll be expanding on that in a second. But, you know, at its core, Nanam is a collaborative molecular design tool that leverages off-the-shelf VR headsets, just like this one. This is a Meta Quest Pro that I have here. And, you know, within Nanam, researchers can literally hold a holographic molecule in their hand or even step into a binding pocket, which is just an incredible experience, I think, for scientists. You know, this is an experience that a lot of scientists have been waiting for so long. And what's even cool is that you can even draw molecules with your hands. It's, you know, what I like to say, it's kind of like those chemistry kits that you might have experienced throughout your academic career, except in VR, you never run out of parts, which is always really fun. And at the end of the day, you know, in Nanam, scientific insights become obvious, and it really allows for literal eureka moments to happen in drug discovery research. Major biopharma companies like Genentech, Nimbus, and Novartis are already using it in their drug discovery process. Sorry, I'm not hearing people.
Maybe we can't hear you.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Apologies for that. So thanks for that introduction, Keita. So say I'm a med chemist. What makes VR or Nanam beneficial? What can I do in VR that I couldn't do in 2D? Mike, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, that's a great question, George. I think in our training as organic chemists, we learn to visualize molecules in three dimensions. We use these little ball and stick models, like driving models, and we can really, you know, look at cyclohexane boat conformation versus chair conformation and really get a feel for it. And when we get into industry, we have so many molecules that we're interested in looking at, and they're complex molecules. And sometimes we want to look at those small molecules bound to a protein, and it'd be really hard to use the same tools to visualize those little ball and stick models. So we use the power of computers to do it. And there's, you know, some great programs to help you visualize in two dimensions, three dimensions. But this is where, you know, Nanam is really incredible, is that you can go into Nanam and look at your structure, and it's back, it's like back having those models again, that you can reach out. So we have these controllers, and in VR they look like hands, and you can actually reach out and grab your molecule, twist it around, look at it. You can take it in two hands and blow it up as big as a house or make it as small as a little ball, and you can actually get into the binding pockets and have a sense of the three dimensionality of them. And we have a measuring tool, so I can look at an atom on my ligand that's bound to a protein and measure the distance to possible hydrogen bond partners on the protein. I can measure angles on molecules too, and then I can just take it in my hands and turn it around. So it's really that feeling, that tactile feeling again of being able to work with molecules with your own hands.
Yeah, kind of to expand on that, right? I think the premise of the question was about, you know, what can you do in VR that you can't do in 2D? And not to be too tongue in cheek, but really there isn't like one thing that you can't do in 2D that VR allows you to do. I think it's just the nature of different compute and interface mediums, if you will. This age old debate of command line or GUIs, graphical user interfaces, right? That's been a long debate where somebody, with expert shortcuts with a command line is always going to be, faster, and they're always going to be able to do quite a bit of things with the command line. But with the GUI, it's just more intuitive, it's easier, and more people can actually use it. And so I think that one big thing, especially with VR, is kind of like, democratizing or lowering the barrier to entry to a lot of these specialized tools for computational research, that then now, because it's more natural, because it's using, basic human interactions like your hands and moving around with your body rather than, abstracting that away with, a keyboard and mouse or whatever, it just becomes a lot more intuitive. And the side effect of that is that these nuances within these structures become instantaneously obvious, right? And so that's like, again, so technically, I would say that there's not really anything in particular that VR can't necessarily do, or sorry, 2D can't necessarily do that VR can only do. It's, in general, it's like these compounding effects of this intuitive way of interacting that really adds up for, dramatically accelerating research.
And I guess the very short thing I would add on top, just to kind of like tie both these like big ideas together of where like we want to work with 3D things and we want it to be as close as possible. And so in a lot of 2D approaches, they've added things like clipping and specific types of shading and specific things that help you sort of break through and make the 2D as much 3D as you can without losing perspective, without losing depth, but at the same time, you're kind of always fighting, pushing and pulling against the application of where I can tell you the number of images I've made out of Pymol and Maestro. I go to a meeting and everyone's like, well, where are the rest of the pictures? Like, well, I thought these would be the ones to give you the full perspective, but you're right, I need to tweak another 20 degrees. And being able to go into VR and easily manipulate, get the full view together as a group without having to use necessarily all these bonus cues, you just get to use the natural, human, highly evolved, highly developed visual senses to really leverage that in VR. And so it's a really great thing of where, absolutely agree, a lot of great ways of using 2D, but there's also just a lot of weight and a lot of things that can be moved apart. And I feel like you have to see it and use it to get the full feel, though.
Yeah, and to be clear, just to expand on that point, right? We're actually very much complementary to a lot of these existing solutions. We don't pretend like it's faster to set up a structure file than Pymol. Like, there's a lot of people that have just amazing skills on like shortcuts and whatnot. Like, it's definitely going to be slower in VR to try to set up the coloring and how to make the structure look exactly the way you want it to. But once you actually get that ready, let's say in Pymol or Mo or Maestro, you can actually directly load that in Nanom. And then, getting your colleagues again on that same page, that's definitely much better, and faster in VR with Nanom. And in fact, we have case studies on that on our website, whether that's Nimbus Therapeutics or Novartis, talking about really just how much of an impact it makes within their workflows.
No, thanks for that, guys. That was really insightful. So how does the day-to-day look for scientists that use Nanom? How can they, utilize this tool? Do you want to take this one, John?
Yeah, I'll admit I do use Nanom every day. Now, probably some obvious reasons why, but I'll describe like ways that I've been able to use it to be really productive and have seen a lot of other scientists use Nanom. And so one big thing, well, we kind of have our day-to-day uses, like some types of sessions. First, I'll kind of describe a little bit of what lets you have a good working session. So you get into Nanom, you can easily load in structures using a lot of different formats you're already using, you know, PDB, PyML sessions, Maestro, Mo sessions, all those sorts of things. Bring in your data, and then you take a look around, you get some insight. But the great thing is that you can keep working there. You can keep doing things of where either you use some of the plugins and tools we've already integrated into Nanom. But our big thing about Nanom is, as a platform, our goal isn't necessarily to give you only the tools that we think you need. We look to integrate with your existing tools. We work to integrate with your current workflows. And where that's a lot of what I get to do is just have conversations with scientists about what does working really look like for you, and not just recreating it, but enabling it within our platform. And so over our plugin structure, you know, we have a front end that you'll see in the Nanom app, but the back end is swappable. And so you'll have other calculations, like for minimization, you have your own force fields likely that you've licensed from somewhere else, and they're amazing force fields. Why not bring them into Nanom? And so that's something we often work on, is making sure that you have the best access to all of your tools. So that way it's not so much making Nanom reshape everything that you're doing, you know, from scratch. It's really made to be brought alongside of. And so that's where my day-to-day often doesn't look that different in some ways, because I am able to bring all my tools in. And so sessions I like to look forward to in Nanom can be more exploratory, of where I've got a new target, I don't know a lot about it, but I've got some papers, I've got some structures, and I jump into Nanom and I'm going to explore all sorts of facets of it really intensely, and come up with new ideas or try to figure out where people haven't really gone yet with a target like this that I might explore. I use it also a lot for the eye test, of where I have my headset, I'll have it sort of lifted above my head so it's not on the whole time, and I'll drop something in real fast, put on my headset and go, I've been working on this molecule, I know this one, I just need to make sure that I'm going in the right direction. I don't want to keep investing a lot of time on something that's not going to work out. And so I can do very quick, sandy sort of check sessions that are just a few minutes, grab someone else, jump in the room together, we both go, that is good. Oh, there's more space than I thought, and really chase after ideas. And that kind of goes into the syncing quickly, of where Mike and I have actually shared quite a bit of time in Nanom, of where we found that there's so many ideas that we don't have until we're in there together, of where we both actually thought a lot about something and we don't even realize, just by being in there together, bouncing ideas, just feeling really free to discuss things. And then after that, we both come away with a much more grounded experience and can share it with either, you know, other people, or just be able to work better on our parts of the equation.
Yeah, and John, I can follow up a bit. Just in my work as a drug discovery consultant, I work with a number of small companies, and I do a lot of new ligand design working with these companies. And some of them are really fortunate to be able to get ligands bound as X-ray crystal structures to their protein, or as cryo-EM structures, and they can, you know, pass me off a PDB file, and I can, you know, upload it directly into Nanom and first inspect, you know, take a look, understand how this new molecule is binding to the protein. I can, you know, quickly look at what interactions it's making. And then while I'm in Nanom, I can actually start designing new analogs, you know, whether it's trying to improve potency or trying to improve phys-chem properties. We have a tool in Nanom, a MedChem tool. It's a drawing tool that you can make new molecules, you know, relatively quickly, and then overlay or dock them into that structure and see how that's worked out. And, you know, a lot of times we are trying to improve phys-chem properties. And so as we make molecules, we might want to do quick calculations. And within Nanom, we have a plug-in there where you can calculate chemical properties, calculate an estimated log P, or calculate the total, the topological polar surface area, and, you know, look at those in a table right there while you're in there. But the other thing is, I can draw new structures in Nanom, but I'm not as fast in there as I am on ChemDraw, if I'm in StarDrop or Data Warrior, where I can, you know, enumerate a number of compounds at once. But I can do that outside of Nanome and then just bring those in and overlay or dock them within Nanome as well. And the great thing is, you know, some of the companies I work with don't have their own X-ray crystal structure, but they're working from one in the public domain. So I can go in the RCSB and, you know, take any PDB directly from there into Nanome and start designing using, you know, that known crystal structure. So it's really useful for a medicinal chemist if you want to just get in and start designing new molecules and looking at how they're going to work out while you're in there.
Yeah, so just to kind of summarize and help kind of tie all these things together, right? Like, we have these variety of different use cases, but this is one of the reasons why, you know, I mentioned in terms of our intro that we consider ourselves as the ultimate interface for drug discovery is precisely because of this kind of multifaceted approach of, being able to bring in any one of your back-end simulation algorithms that you prefer, also being able to bring in any different colleagues with different backgrounds, like I should say, into the same environment, and then be able to really conduct these, you know, variety of different use cases within Nanome. So, just wanted to quickly add that.
Oh, and one last thing, just to kind of highlight, because Mike, I think, gave a really good description of what a nice active session looks like. Just to kind of let you guys know, like when he was talking about drawing, we have a minimization plugin that we can swap in and out with. When he's talking about docking, once again, we have a docking interface, but once again, more than happy to bring in other docking algorithms that you prefer. And so like all these things that Mike described are really, you know, just peppered with these integrations that you guys are already familiar with and already are using. But once again, those same sort of experiences, same sort of value you get from your current tool set, it's not, will Nanome displace and replace all those tools? It's, how will I get even more value out of those tools, make it easier to use, and really get it across my whole team and not siloed or things like that, where, you know, Mike kept mentioning, you know, like maybe they don't have all these things, maybe they don't have all these resources, but if you go into Nanome and you can really build up the intuition in both how you see information generally, but also intuition, the intuitiveness of Nanome is also replicated in its user interface, allowing scientists who are curious to use new tools they've never used before in a much simpler, easier way alongside their colleagues. So it's a really complementary, where both that first question, that second question are really kind of showing how people work together and do so productively.
Yeah, and John, I was just going to mention, you know, when you're in Nanome, you're in this virtual reality room. It's like its own world, but you're really good at using a web browser in there too and sort of interfacing with outside of the VR world through your web browser. And I think that's really cool.
Oh yeah, that's a great point. Like one thing that we talk about integrations, and people often are asking things like, man, like I just really like to have AlphaFold here. And we actually, like, we produced a little graphic of showing, like, well, we fully integrated, because AlphaFold has a great web, you know, site that you can just jump into. You saw a flash of it there. A lot of these web apps love these things. Because we built our web browser to work well with both uploading and downloading information, there's a lot of that basic integration is already there. No additional work required. And, you know, I enjoy a number, and I think more and more companies are able to build out these high quality web apps, and even like some of the publicly available ones that people also utilize, such as AlphaFold, are all right there for you guys to use as soon as you like.
Thank you so much for that, guys. I mean, there's such a wide range of capabilities that Nanome enables. So you also mentioned before that scientists use Nanome to collaborate. Could you comment on that a little bit? Mike, I think this is a question for you.
Yeah, I'll get started and then Kata and John can jump in. But I think, you know, in drug discovery, we're always working on teams. You know, we're always in integrated teams. Usually you're working with a number of other chemists, computational chemists, and then people outside of chemistry. And what's really great about Nanome is you really do feel like you're in the same room. You know, we've had times where, you know, we're working with people in different sites and they're talking and it really just feels like they're standing next to you. You can even, you know, high five in Nanom with people when you come up with a really good design. One thing that I think about is, you know, in the early days of the pandemic, when we were all, you know, pretty much locked in our homes or in a single person office. And I think those of us that work with Nanom were excited to see if we could do anything to help with the pandemic. You know, we didn't know what would work. And we had sessions with Mike Kuiper, a researcher in Melbourne, Australia, who's doing some really interesting work on COVID-19. You know, we got into Nanom with him and talked about what he was doing. The great AI company in Silico Medicine had done some new designs of the main protease inhibitors that they wanted to use. And so we took their designs into Nanom and looked at them in virtual reality in three dimensions and, you know, fed back to them which ones we thought would fit the best. So we had a collaboration with them in virtual reality. And I think the scientist we worked with was in Singapore, you know, and I'm in San Diego. And it was just really exciting when we all felt sort of trapped in our homes to be able to collaborate scientifically with people in what felt like a real room, the virtual room that we were in.
Absolutely. That's something of where I'd love this to kind of sew this all together, because, you know, the very beginning we talk a bit about like, okay, like what is this interface really like? Like, how does this compare and relate to the environments I already use to do a lot of this discovery, both as far as, you know, just what it looks like. And we're talking a bit about like, well, what are like kind of individuals, what are they doing here? And like, I would have to say that as far as, you know, VR and how Nanom has been built and being used, that collaboration, you know, might be like, it's hard to pick one, but might be the superpower that teams experience most readily within Nanom. And like, we see like kind of like these four bullets about types of communication, but I mean, Mike gave lots of good examples of like very distinct examples, but I'll say from my experience with different groups, like seeing how both communicating to people outside of your specialty has been a really big boom. We have crystallographers and structural biologists who have to do, you know, painstaking work and really understanding the pocket, but they're not going to make the molecules. They need to pass that information on to really inform their team, help out, you know, either computational chemists, medicinal chemists, and, you know, all these different groups have different responsibilities, but communication is always key in making sure that everybody gets moving capably. And being able to either bounce more ideas of where Mike and I share a bit more of a specialty, and so we have a great time just sort of, you know, popcorning and thinking of crazy things together. But with my other colleagues and with customers that are more into other disciplines, just being able to very easily and clearly communicate, you know, over there, it's that residue. You know, even like little moments like that where you can put your hand right in there, they can put their hand right in there, they can move it around and get the perspective. There's just a lot of things that I remember being frustrating in some meetings of where I'd write up a huge report or I'd get a dozen pictures and it still felt like I didn't quite get all the way there. Whereas in Nanom, generally it's just a few minutes and I feel very much like we all understand together. And to other scientists, communication is difficult, but, you know, stakeholders, management, investors, people that might not be as deep in the science or really wanting to understand every, you know, facet, VR does provide a great opportunity for them to get this idea that's often made into numbers and a few graphs and goes into, well, look at my molecule. Look at how beautifully it fits. Look at how it works. Here's the mechanism. Here's why we think it works this way. And it's much more, we found to be very persuasive, even with bringing in that data, either through the web browser or PDFs that we also support. And then we've seen with more CROs and more people that collaborate more frequently externally, being able to pass on the value of your work to them, communicate that well, or even just to make sure that instead of a dozen meetings or a bunch of other things to kind of get it clear what you want, it becomes much faster just because you're able to show the real deal right in front of them right there. And so I kind of see the collaboration just having so many different flavors that we probably don't even cover all of them with these four examples, but it's a good place to go in there, and you can see, you know, five people have no problem passing around knowing and understanding perspectives together.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting, like when we started this journey of kind of building Nanom, one of the things that we quickly found, like as we were brainstorming kind of, you know, and organizing like with different team members, like we were always using, you know, Google Docs, Google Sheets, things like that, that has live collaboration that allows, you know, multiple people to be on the same, you know, document working together. And we found that, you know, while there are some kind of collaborative solutions kind of in the scientific, you know, in silico drug discovery space, there really, you know, wasn't a huge, you know, presence or a go-to solution when it came to here's something that we can work on together, be on the same page, and edit live, right? And so that's something that I think, you know, like I can confidently say, like Google Docs for molecules is definitely something that took a very large inspiration, you know, and earlier on in the process. But you know, I think kind of touching on earlier points of both John and Mike of what you said, right? And one of the things that we've heard from our users is that oftentimes scientists with different specialties have their own language, right? Chemists have their own language, biologists have their own language. And you know what that means ultimately is that different things are more important to or have different weights in terms of importance to what their research is, right? And so when you actually get into this environment, I think that because of how obvious and immediate the structural nuances are, you're able to basically cut through a lot of the linguistic barriers or specialistic barriers, if you will, about these different, you know, scientists with different backgrounds. And so actually, you know, one of the case studies specifically on this is the Novartis case study we did with Oculus. On kind of like, you know, bringing different folks with different backgrounds. And for me as a non-scientist, I feel like I get this benefit a lot where, you know, oftentimes I don't exactly understand the mechanism of action or how exactly a therapeutic is proposed to work. And, you know, I just go into Nanom with John and Mike and it's like, again, immediately obvious, like this makes sense. This is what it looks better. You know, you can understand really just the you know the fit and the different chemical interactions that's having and things like that. And so you know I think that a big thing also you know towards the bottom of this slide here is like the stakeholder communication and external communication is a large part, right? Because it's easy, I feel like, you know, even for me when I'm working on my own projects, right, I'm always into the weeds and I know exactly what's going on. But when it comes to actually communicating externally for those that don't necessarily spend a bulk of their time on that particular project, right? There's a huge amount of context and a huge amount of catching up for them to do, which again is just dramatically accelerated within kind of this you know VR or MR environment.
I wanted to kind of speak to that like a little bit of a bonus because I think that's you brought up like a lot of really powerful points about both bringing in new people and understanding like the overall scope of these projects, because oftentimes even within a single project you have like kind of like multiple life cycles almost within itself of where you change directions, you come up with big new ideas. And one of the things I really like about Nanom, as if we want to borrow that Google Docs example a little bit, is, you know, we sort of have like a version history option as well. So we have something called spatial recordings of where, and a lot of my meetings both with, you know, some, like, you know, Kata and Mike, as well as with customers, we'll run a spatial recording that allows you to record the session and be able to share it with people later. And it makes it really easy to either save snapshots out of it if maybe you had a really awesome idea and you just didn't have time to go in that direction during the meeting, or just to kind of keep it as a nice backup of where somebody misses the meeting or you add a new team member, instead of it being, well, I have a whole bunch of, you know, workspaces that you could go through and try to understand what I did. No, you can go to a space recording and see, you know, where I made decisions. And, you know, I sound a little crazy, but I talk out loud in Nanom. Now that I know the space recording's there, I'm happy to talk a little bit like, oh, I think it's going to go in this direction. And I passed it to people and they've come up with, you know, awesome ideas from it, as well as just making sure that instead of it, you know, feeling like, you know, you're just in there alone building workspaces and you're just hoping that somebody sees it. You get in there together and you make recordings that you can share and just increase that collaboration both synchronously and asynchronously.
Thanks for adding so much clarity there, guys. Really helpful. We'll now be moving on to the Q Q&A section of this webinar. So if anyone has any questions, feel free to drop them in the box below. So to begin with, we have a question on pharmacophore property calculations for ligand-based drug discovery. How can Nanome be useful in this space?
Yeah, so I would say that's an awesome example of a plugin. so that's something of where I've been able to utilizing Nanome as sort of this like this, you know, sandbox of a space and being able to visualize pharmacophores through really using, you know, representative, you know, models of using surfaces and things like that to understand priorities within spaces and understanding their overall three-dimensionality of a binding site and what areas you want to take advantage of in different ways over a whole data set. And so I would say right now, pharmacophore property calculator isn't something that, you know, we have in Nanome right now, but if you want to bring it into Nanome, we can show you how to bring it into Nanome. And once again, that's a beautiful example of the kind of thing that we integrate actively into Nanome, because it is a 3D data set that is very leverageable in that context.
That's that's really great. Thanks for answering that question. Another one is, could I just buy a headset at Amazon or Best Buy? What specialist equipment is needed?
Yeah, so I could happy to take that one. Yeah, so we're fairly kind of hardware agnostic when it comes to what type of headsets we work with, and so kind of the only exception really is like the ones where you slot in your phone that's like super cheap, and the primary reason because of that, and someday it might be good enough, is because of the hand controllers, right? You can see in this example here just like how intuitive it is. As Mike was saying earlier, it's like literally having your hands in there, and so. You know, the basically headsets that don't have these controllers are the headsets that we don't support. That's like kind of a good framework of thinking about it, right? You know, specifically, obviously the Meta Quest is kind of probably the most affordable, most widespread popular headset. The Meta Quest Pro, Meta Quest Pro just came out a couple months ago, and we're also compatible with that. In fact, we're one of the launch titles for that. On the other side, or other kind of headsets include the HTC Vive, as well as the Vive Focus headsets. Also, we have some prototypes right now for the Pico Neo headset. Pico, by the way, is owned by ByteDance, which is the same parent company as TikTok. You know, it is interesting to see kind of these social media companies entering this space in mass. You know, we can't say we're like fully compatible just yet, but, you know, most likely we'll be supporting that headset soon as well. And then lastly, kind of on the more higher end side of things with the PC VR. So these specifically need to connect to the computer. And those include the Valve Index, the HP Reverb G2, and then other headsets like the Pimax. Those are also compatible via Steam VR. And so again, fairly hardware agnostic and fairly diverse set of headsets that we support, which by the way, can be found on Amazon and Best Buy and stuff.
That's great. Thanks for that, Cater. And following on from that question, assuming I have a headset, how would I get started?
Yeah, so, I guess depends on the headsets that you have. So for the PC VR, I think Steam VR is definitely, the Steam VR App Store is definitely the one that we recommend. For the other headsets, like especially the Meta Quest, like we are on the app stores, corresponding app stores. So you literally just search Nanome and then you should be able to get started for free. Look at some structures, you know, up in the palm of your hands and check it out.
And also, once you get in there, there is a nice tutorial to get you started. So somebody sort of walks you through what you can do as soon as you get in there. So it makes it a lot easier to get started that way.
That's great. Thank you, guys. And we have another question. Could you load in any structure?
Yep. So we have a direct integration with the RCSB PDB protein database, so as well as Drug Bank and a few other databases. And then you can also load directly from your local directory within your computer as well. And then we also have a cloud plugin called Vault. Basically, it's kind of like a Google Drive type thing where there's a web interface and interface within VR that you can load from.
That's great, thank you. And then we've also had asked, during interaction, how easy is it to submit a new design to the compute pipeline and analyze results in real time? For instance, testing an R series with a few hundred variants isn't quite demanding for docking.
Yeah, so that's a great question. So overall, I'll kind of like answer it slightly in the context that you're describing there. But we've got a few different ways. So we have both a real-time scoring approach of where as you design, you get to see live, updates to the overall score of the structure to understand it a bit more in depth. But you can also pretty easily, if you build out, a series of, a number of variants within Nanum or somewhere else and you want to dock those, really setting up the dock is, pretty rudimentary. All you have to do is select the complex that has all the ligands and put it in against the docking site that you identify. So I would say both those are relatively easy to do. Now, I'll answer slightly the question behind the question. and what I would say, like analyzing the results in real time, that's something that I would say is exactly kind of what you want to be doing. Where we mentioned, like you might want to be able to do it, like the check-in, I would say that the other really big thing we like to focus on is being able to do sort of those more in-depth analyses of where you have that pocket, you have the, the scoring, and you even have atom-based scoring, and really focusing on how is this really interacting, where can I optimize this further, and how does my set look overall? And so, yeah, very easy to do it fully in real time as you make modifications, or to submit whatever group of designs that you either made in or out of Nanome, and then investigate, in depth what the results were.
That's great, thank you. And now onto another question, which is also about loading. What file formats can be loaded into Nanome?
Yeah, so I don't have like the full list memorized at, like the back of my hand, but I can tell you like in general, like most of the molecular formats like .pdb, and in fact some of the file formats that we mentioned throughout the webinar, like Mo session files, Maestro session files, things like that. And then also on the other side of the spectrum, that's I guess comparatively non-scientific, is like things like PNG images as well as PDF. You can load them directly into your workspace. So those are kind of the main ones. John, Mike, feel free to kind of chime in here if there's any major ones that I missed.
I was just going to say, Kato, with the integrations that you've talked about and John's talked about, some users will prefer, if they have a different software package that they really like to do work in as far as docking, they may want to do the large numbers outside of Nanome and then bring in the winners, if you will, to do a really in-depth look at the structure in virtual reality. Because I think that's, I know some computational chemists who are really experts at seeing 3D in 2D, but I think everyone gets a little bit better vision if they're in virtual reality. But you might not want to bring in 1,000 molecules. It might be a lot better to bring in your top ones and really look at those closely in Nanome, having worked with something that you're a lot faster at outside of Nanome.
Yeah, very good point. I think real quickly on the like loading in structures, we've been talking a little bit more about static structures and looking at pockets specifically, but I do think we also load in trajectory files rather well. And so you are able to view, molecular dynamic simulations in Nanome. While we don't currently calculate them in Nanome, a lot of people, they'd rather not sit in VR for days while they're waiting for an MT run to finish calculating. And so we've really been able to make it really powerful for people both to understand the full space and the dynamics of the situation, both individually and collaborating. So I just wanted to add a little bonus to other file types that we often see chemists utilizing in Nanome.
That's great. Thanks for that, Jonathan. And we have another question now as well. What is the metaverse, and how does this? What does this have to do? What does Nanom have to do with the metaverse?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question, especially given kind of like Facebook changing their name to Meta. I think, you know, the word metaverse has definitely been more part of the popular discourse. It's kind of a fun topic in a sense that depending on who you ask, you get different answers for the metaverse. You know, for me, it's I think it's just a virtual world. It can be, it doesn't necessarily have to be 3D, where people come together and, you know, do things, all kinds of things, from having fun to doing research to what have you, right? And so for me, personally, I think Nanom is the science metaverse, as close as it gets currently, right? There's not as many, you know, other collaborative scientific XR-based software that's out there, or experiences out there where people come together and do research. You know, anecdotally, what's been really awesome, we've heard, is that because our app is available on the App Store for free, we've had researchers across the globe. Like I believe one was in Australia, and you can see a list of rooms that are available, and you can obviously choose to lock them if you're, you know, don't want anybody to bother you, but you can choose to leave your door open, if you will, you know, into your virtual room. And so this Australian researcher went into an unlocked room of another Swedish professor, and they just struck up a conversation that wouldn't have otherwise happened. And, you know, they were talking about potential collaborations and whatnot. And to me, that's like super exciting and really kind of, I believe, you know, the next frontier, as these devices become cheaper and cheaper and more accessible, you know, is like, I think what the original vision of the internet was, right? Like the internet was invented for scientists to connect together, share information. And I think that, you know, Nanom is probably the closest thing to the modern reincarnation of that, as scientists are you know, openly sharing their research and collaborating. Now, that said, that's like obviously on the free and kind of public side, if you will. Most of our customers are, you know, in these top pharma companies where obviously they can't share their research and information. But it is, what is exciting, and some of the preliminary conversations that we've been having has been with, you know, contract research organizations, or CROs, where, you know, these organizations fundamentally, they service a lot of different customers, right? And so traditionally, like up until recently, a lot of our kind of infrastructure and the way in which people have been using it have been very much siloed, right? Like when Novartis has had their kind of like Novartis Niverse, if you will, and Genentech has had their, like, you know, Genentech Verse, if you will, that's powered by Nanom. But, you know, eventually what we'd love to see is, you know, having these you know, CROs connect these different organizations and researchers together, where you can start to now see this network of scientists that are collaborating together in this immersive environment, right? So, you know, I know that's a lot of kind of pie in the sky, things haven't happened yet, but very much exciting. And to me, that's what kind of the metaverse means, and how Nanom has that relationship with the metaverse. But, you know, John, Mike, I would love to hear your guys' ideas on this as well.
I would say, for me, the concept of a metaverse, which is just like fascinating generally, and it's this, to me, the idea is just like kind of how people have been talking about it in the general, you know, zeitgeist, is how do we bring more things together, just like Keita said. And to me, it looks like just having things that are easy to share, easy to go across platform, of where I'd say, you know, there's more than 20 awesome software out there that all work in distinct ways and don't have file types that always work well with one another. And I'd say a metaverse and an area that takes the best features of everything and makes it easier for people to come together just sounds like a really, you know, once again, like that might be pie in the sky, might be something that's happening, but we're already seeing it happen between scientists of very different roles, very different backgrounds, very different countries, all making it very easy for them to get through all sorts of barriers that, you know, emerged more or less, you know, recently in earnest, but have always been there to some degree.
And for me, it's just the feeling that you're in the same room in that virtual reality space with people, no matter where they are on Earth, is just really incredible. Really like that.
That's really great. Thank you, guys. I mean, the capabilities that Nanom has for collaboration are really exciting. And that brings our Q&A section to a close here. So thank you for attending, everyone. You can learn more by visiting nanom.ai, which is the website. And you can go there to request a demo. That's free. If you've got a headset, you can find Nanom on the App Store. The app is free and you can get started anytime. Hope everyone has a great day. And thanks for coming. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, George.
Thanks.
Thank you all. Take care.